Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Up here on stage, you have two of the most sober people this morning. Kind of a special treat for us this morning. This is a subject where I've been. We have John Tilley, who's a graduate of Trinity College, a very eclectic set of interests, including the game Go, which is probably a mystery to most of us. But he seems to have graduated and decided there were bigger things in life, so he did a little walkabout around two-thirds of the world before he settled down as an IT manager with IBM, where he's currently employed. He's had a lifelong interest in maps and got caught up in the work of Vandenberg many years ago, who some of you are probably familiar with his eclipse cycles and the names that he gave to them. And, of course, he's with Luke Caglia, has produced those lovely maps that are out in the foyer, and which I know a number of us have looked at, and we wonder how those patterns arrive and what causes them. Luca is a graduate of the Milan Polytechnica. He has a master's degree in nuclear engineering, and you know that sort of seemed a little bit out of line with our hobby here. He has a PhD in physics from the University of Bucharest. And he also was caught up in eclipse and astronomical phenomena and the patterns that are revealed by solar eclipses. So here they are today to talk to us about the preliminary version of their program, Solar Eclipse Explorer.
Can we move over to the... just drop the lights slightly. This is sort of just a screenshot to get us started. By the way, I'm John Tilley, and this is Luca. What we've got here is the... I've actually got the wrong date up there, but don't worry about that coming. I'll just redraw it. Probably Patrick's fault. So don't worry, Linda. I set this Richard thing up. The easy thing to do is to restart it. Restart. Should probably have started initially because we were playing around beforehand. We actually call this a preview, but it's very much work in progress. So if you just click on draw, it draws it. I'll switch the rotate off. At the moment, because I've just been finishing debugging, I've left the lines here as little dots as it helps me with debugging. So you've got the maximum eclipse at sunrise, sunset, and on the horizon. This shows you the track of totality. The reason I went for this one is that I've got most of the mapping at the moment around Europe. One of the facilities or features of the program is the mappings. Jay said we're into mapping, so you can zoom in and you can move around. This is just the base map, so the base map's not particularly detailed. In fact, if anything, it's a bit crude. As you zoom in now, it switches, and currently I'm just using the colour green. What you might notice occasionally is a little area like that. So what you've got is you've got the detailed map sitting on the base map, and so if the base map peeps out, you see it. Obviously, I've got to delete it, but that's one of those things I haven't got around to yet. And this has taken up a fair amount of my spare time. If you zoom a little bit further, we now see the populated places. For the Americans, there's a quick geography lesson. Obviously, you've got London, you've got Paris, England, Wales, Scotland, please don't confuse England, Wales and Scotland. You really do upset people. People who saw the annual eclipse last year in England probably get shot if you're lucky, or forced to eat boiled haggis or something. If we carry on zooming, we now add the roads. I've actually done all the roads the same width. The program, the mapping comes from something called Digital Chart of the World. It's actually free on the internet, but it's quite a big download, so most people tend to get it on CD. What we've now done, it's probably a bit too far, let's go back. Here, you've got London, I hope it's London, we'll say London, yeah, and the Bristol Channel, so you've got Bristol. The brown ones are the roads, blue ones are the rivers. There is more detail you can add, so you can add contours, places of interest, cultural places, etc., etc. The map then gets a bit busy. If we just zoom back, what we'll do is we'll nip along to Cornwall, because Joe, you might have been clouded out, or you might have been lucky. Then if you zoom in on Cornwall, what you can do is to come here and go click. And if you look at the bottom of the screen, when you click, it's the mouse is there. You just move the mouse. It's actually showing you that you've got a total eclipse situation, 2 minutes, 4 seconds, magnitude, yeah? In fact, it calculates 1.01225. You could argue it should just say 1. The scale is shown here in kilometres. I was tempted to do it in miles, because I still work in miles, but I've left it in kilometres for the moment. So, if you were here, you should get 2 minutes, 4 seconds. Yeah, you get 2 minutes, 4 seconds. As you move up the central line, drops to 2.1, a little bit further, 1.47, you get a 1.29, come up here, this is a partial eclipse, so you can interact with it. I had thought that maybe as you move the mouse, to automatically do it, but haven't got that little bit working yet. I was playing around yesterday. So here, if we just come along, you've got Paignton in Devon, you've got Newton Abbot, and forget the name of that little river there. One of the things that's difficult with digital charts as well is actually pick up the place names. And there's another form of mapping which reuses this data called VectorMap 0. My current plan is to actually switch from DCW to VectorMap 0. I haven't got it on this laptop, but you can download VMAP 0 with a free viewer. And what is really great is with a free viewer, as you zoom around, the mouse goes over a town, it tells you the name of the town. That's one of the features I'd like to try and add. So that just gives you a little bit of an idea. I thought what we might do is to plan an eclipse trip. So, I think 2006. And if you now draw, of course, getting the central total eclipse, 29th of March. So if you're debating, you wanted to go to Libya, maybe as an American you may feel Libya is slightly risky. If you clicked here, you would see that on the coast in Libya, so this line's a little bit thin, that's the border, right? So we click there, so you're getting a 3 minute 54 second total. If you stayed in Egypt, because you're happier just to get the stomach troubles of Egypt rather than go to Libya, you drop to 3 minutes 50. You might decide you want to go to Turkey, so if you stood here on the Turkey thing, you get 3 minutes 40, yeah? So up there, 3 minutes 40. If you wanted to just go to this part of Turkey on the coast, you still get 3 minutes 40. In fact, if you're risky, you get an extra 1 second. If we just move up, I haven't actually put the detailed mapping in for Cyprus. I just loaded about 17 countries up. So here in Turkey, you now see the road network. Some of the Turkish roads are quite interesting if you've been there. My advice is don't hire a car. So that really shows you the 2006 eclipse. Just one other thing, then Luca's going to mention a couple of things. What you can do is to go back to tried and trusted and draw. If you click here on Saros, you've then got the ability to navigate within the Saros series. So this will take us back, yeah? One, two eclipses. This now takes us forward, yeah? You can do the same thing. Let's go back. Yeah, so 1999. If you click on the INEX, depends how you want to pronounce it, you do exactly the same thing. Luke will talk a little bit about, yeah, what that is. There's a slight problem there that loses one of the limits, that particular one. One thing you may have noticed at the bottom is the compass card. We'll talk about that in a minute. But if I just try and summarise where we are, the programme has got a list box, and it contains all the eclipses from minus 11,000 to 15,000. Luca will talk a little bit about why we chose, or he chose, that particular range. It's probably the range, the longest range you can do, because otherwise you start getting the position of the moon thing a little bit vague. There's the map. You can actually change the projection to all sorts of things if you want to, but I've just left it as a globe. You've got summary of the eclipse here. You've got the Vandenberg compass card, which we'll come on to. You get the, when you click on it, yeah, total duration, etc., etc. You've got the ability to do a few more things here with the globe. You can investigate the Saros Index, and a little thing later I'll show you on all the Saros series. So that's a quick overview. Luca's going to, let's find our PowerPoint presentation. There's one second, there's a couple of things in it. I mean, if you saw the poster, it tells you a little bit about it, so I don't really intend to go through this. But one thing I would say is that Will Carlton, who is a member of the solar eclipse mailing list, I've been trying to find, I believe some of you, G. Vandenberg's famous book here. And it's very, very hard to find. You can get it in the university library, or you get someone to photocopy it for you if you've got friends. And luckily Will found some copies by contacting Vandenberg's son. So I bought a copy, and I didn't know Luca at the time. Excuse me. Luca bought a copy as well. And then we both started looking at the Saros Index, and we came across this mysterious Saros serum. And there is a hole, and we'll show you this in a moment or two. And we exchanged emails and we joined forces. So where we currently stand is about version 0.7. I rewrote a lot of the code, and it's still little bits to use. I use different books, and this book is an absolute pig. So if you've ever done any programming of eclipses, there are two explanatory supplements. You've got the old one, and mine's the 1974 reprint, it's great. The people who wrote the 1992 one, I had a couple of emails with them, and there are about at least seven mistakes in it. Some of them are so serious, you wonder how anybody could have actually printed this. And the author, Alan Fiala and John Banger, Alan replied, I don't know how it could be so apparently mangled. And John Banger said, oh, for God's sake, use the old one, which I decided to do. Some of our future plans, I've got a couple of bugs in the eclipse maps, and there's another minor one, but we're getting there. Luca and I want to do a full system test and check our data with friends. We've checked quite a lot of it with EMAP windows. I want to switch the mapping to the vector map. This is a 1 to a million scale. This is 1 to 250,000. But you can only get part of the world at the moment. The US government haven't released it. So anybody in the US government who could help us release it, yeah, please do so. Place things I've already picked up from here. But I want to add a little bit of additional graphics and pick up the old elevation data here. The shuttle mission mapped most of the world. In fact, there are 12 terabytes of data there, which is probably quite a lot for my laptop at the moment. But I've already had a little bit of a play with it and looked at English Lake District. But the idea is you can then get the colour, you've got the elevation, you can blend them together, and it would improve the graphics. So, the compass card, very quickly, then I'll give it, pass it over to Luca. The compass card was invented by Vandenberg, and this is the moon's orbit. That's actually the position of the moon. The top is perigee, the bottom is apogee. So I remember that as CP, close point, so P's for perigee, and far away, A's for apogee. So at perigee, the moon is so large, you can only get a total eclipse. At apogee, when the moon is far away, the moon is relatively small, so you can only get an annular eclipse. Vandenberg said if you calculate these four points, right, which are done in degrees, you can then draw it. Depending where the moon is, you can immediately see for any eclipse whether it's total, hybrid, or annular total, or an annular one. And so Luca did the calculation here for the next hybrid eclipse. I think that's the one that crosses Madrid. And you can tell from the compass card exactly what it is. And the program dynamically does the compass card. Luca did that. What we'll do now is I'll pass over to Luca and he'll go through the, some of the maths behind it. There's a test at the end of this, so pay attention.
Thank you, Tom. Okay. And so this wonderful work of mapping has to be coupled with the database of solar eclipses. And so I have calculated all the eclipses from minus 11,000 to plus 15,000. And I have chosen this wide time span for two reasons. Because Professor Vandenberg introduced a very wonderful way, a very wonderful tool to study order and regularities behind solar eclipses. And he explained his panorama in Masterpiece was edited in 1955. But he used the canon, Oppolzer's canon, which stands from minus 1,200 to plus 2,200. And so, because, yes, he had only this canon. And in order to study long variation in the panorama, we have extended the time span and we have calculated the database of solar eclipses. And so I have used the usual algorithm described in the explanatory supplement or in Mess works, but in order to carry on such complex, a huge calculation, you have to have a very precise ephemeris. And so the most precise ephemeris is DE406 from NASA, but it goes from minus 3,000 to plus 3,000. And so I wanted something which nearly the same precision, but which can go outside from minus 11,000 to plus 15,000. And so I came across a wonderful program, SOLEX by Professor Vitaliano. And the integrator, this program uses a numerical integrator in order to calculate the ephemeris, and it has the same precision as DE406, but it can run outside minus 3,000 and plus 3,000. And the numerical integration is carried on a model of the solar system, which comprises the Sun, planets, Moon, and three major asteroids, and which takes in account Newtonian forces and perturbations due to general relativity to the figure and tidal effects for the Moon and for the figure of the Earth and the non-sphericity of the Sun. And for the accuracy, there are three main causes control the accuracy: the uncertainty in the tidal secular acceleration, the uncertainty in the Earth mean motion, and there is an error due to the method, due to the integration. And here you can see the time in centuries from 2000, and here there is error due to the uncertainty due to the tidal acceleration. In blue, the error due to the integration, and last black line, the error due to the uncertainty in the mean motion. And you can see the most important source of uncertainty is the tidal lack of knowledge with tidal acceleration. And our ephemeris is very precise below the uncertainty in the tidal acceleration.
Yeah. A little bit on the Saros and Linux. I think you all know what the Saros is. It's a period of 18 years, 11 days and a little bit. The one which people know less about is the INX, or INX, depending how you want to pronounce it. And probably the simplest way of describing it is if you take the saros and you put them in a column, then you take another saros, you can actually match them up and you get a common gap between them, which is this period here. It allows that you to then place it on a 2D map, and it's just done like this. So the saros is vertical and the in X is horizontal. So Luca chose this eclipse here, which is I think the Hawaiian eclipse of 1991. So 18 and a bit years earlier, 73, Saros, Saros, Saros. This I think is the eclipse that crosses China, starts in Himalaya. Then the in X goes across here. If we go back to this, the Saros Inex panorama is here. You've actually probably seen it, yeah? There's a poster. And you can zoom in, you can zoom out on this. You can also play around and navigate within it. The thing which, let me just go do, so we're actually in Saros 145 for the 1999 eclipse. If we go back in history a little bit, so no charge for the time travel. This is what brought Luca and myself together. You may think we're a pair of sad individuals if this is what brings you together, but I rather didn't actually say that. So what we've got here is Saros Zero, yeah? And you get a total eclipse. When Vandenberg wrote his book, he initially said, once Saros enters the zone where you get the full silhouette eclipses, they continue to be full silhouette until it drops out the bottom. So I plotted it up and found it went total, annular total, annular. Then it goes back to partial, so there's a hole in the Saros. Then it goes back to annular. You think, what is going on here? And what is going on is that as you go back a long time in history, so if we just take that first eclipse, so we're looking here at minus 2759, yeah, 19. You've changed the eccentricity of the Earth's orbit. Luke will talk a little bit more about it. If you're seriously interested in this, my suggestion is over lunch, grab Luca. He's got a poster on two tables, and he can take you a little bit through it because he's done some research in this. The compass card here, there's a slight bug, just sometimes the compass card rotates rather than does an update. I haven't yet worked out what the problem is. I normally do my debugging by walking the dogs and thinking about it. If you sit in front of the computer screen, you don't solve anything. What you need to do is to count up to 10 and go and do something else, and then you can generally work it out. However, if we... Yeah, that's right. Go down, hang on a second. Yeah. If we now start going down, you can see the compass card moving around, so we're not quite right there at all, are we? Let's maybe take... Yeah. So what we've got here is this particular Saros, which is Saros 1, we're here in it. The compass card is showing you that you can only get annular eclipses. Yeah, because of the position of the Earth, the Moon and the Sun. So if you want to, you can go down and you'll see the car here moving around. If you wanted to explore, we don't really have enough time to go into this, but you can explore the Inex by going the other way. So here we've got annular eclipse. You go total, annular, annular, total, total. So if we go the other way, so in an Inex that jumps much further, yeah? So if you look at the mount here, you might get, typically get one total and then two annulars. So you get total, annular, annular, total, annular, annular, total. Just occasionally, you'll get two totals. So we'll have another little trip in time. You can see the card here, yeah, jumping around. And there, because the total zone is quite wide, you pick up two totals, yes? Then you go to annular at the bottom, total, total, annular, total, total, annular, annular, total, and so on. And it jumps around. So you can play with this to your heart's content if you're a sad individual like me and Luca.
If you look at the panorama, you've got some interesting little things. These are all described in Vandenberg's book. I was saying to Jay at the beginning, Vandenberg wrote his book, and I think he had the attitude, I'm a professor of constitutional law, and this is a difficult subject. So by God, I'm going to make the book difficult, yes? Whereas you do have some really nice books on eclipses, and the Totality book, which is Wilcox, is it? Lippmann and Frelispack join forces. The second chapter in that is a very nice, simple chapter to understand. And Guy Ottewell's book is also a really good book. But you get Vandenberg's book, and it's not the easiest. However, he came up with a variety of patterns. So this pattern he called the hayfork. You probably needed a couple of pints last night to see this, but if you didn't have it, I'll do my best. So you get a row of annular totals, column of annular totals, a bit coming down here, and a bit going up here. So this he called the hayfork. And if you looked at the whole panorama, it's probably easiest to do it upstairs, you'll see at the top and bottom of it, hayforks, and they occur, and there is a gap between them. I think it's about every 600 years. As you go back in history, they actually die out. You also get these little things here, and you'll a little hard to see, but this is hanging down. Yes, and you've a row of partials, and so he called these stalactites. And the one at the bottom is the stalagmite. If you get confused between the two, the way I was taught it when I was a kid, the stalactite, C for ceiling, yeah, so hand comes from the ceiling, stalag, G for ground, stalagmite. If you're a Harry Potter fan, you might remember in the first book, Hagrid said stalagmite's got an M in it, my head hurts, I'm going to have a pipe in the leaky cauldron, which is one other way you could look at it. Let me just show you one other thing, then we just keep an eye on the time. What you can do is click on Saros. So sit very quietly, and now I'm going to show you the complete Saros. And it's actually, I've got an invalid floating point operation, so I may have to restart it. Probably safest. There's a little bug. Despite a couple of dog walks over the last 2 days, I didn't get to the bottom of it. We'll just draw that, switch the timer on. It's going to work. Yeah, so you just draw the pulse off very quickly, yeah? So we're just drawing here the total annular total, yeah? You can now tilt it up a little bit, or tilt down. And having done this, what really amused or interested me was the question, what is the maximum number of eclipses in the same Saros you can see from a given place? Obviously, delta T has a lot to do with it. The answer is, I've no idea. I was hoping Gene Beers was going to be here. We could give it to him as a problem to be worked on over lunch. Like, it might take a very long lunch break. I think there are places where you get five, yes? So threes and fours are quite common, but occasionally you see a five. The other thing I thought of doing was, you close the ends here, you could obviously paint the Saros black, and you can then run the thing, and it does Mias's painted globe. I also thought maybe you would get Luca to sing Mick Jagger or imitate Mick Jagger doing painted black, but decided we'd let you off that as it's stumbling a little bit early. You go obviously just rotate the globe, and that shows you that particular Saros. Just keeping an eye on time. Do you want to go back and do a little summary on the Saros? Oh, one thing I will do is in the display upstairs, we produce that by exporting the grid into Excel. Luca, or a friend of Luca's, Alessandro, here wrote a macro to cover it. Then we just printed it off and stuck it together. So it occurred to me that one or two of you that sad individuals like ours might be interested. And so you'll find somewhere on the web, and if you wanted a copy of the spreadsheet, yes, so you can print off Saros in its panorama, we'll let you have it, and no charge, you just need to find a home for it. If you don't have Excel, right, he's running an Excel, and you don't want to go and pay Bill Gates lots of money, it does actually work in the free Open Office spreadsheet, because that's how I did it on my PC. So this is my IBM Word PC, so IBM's called Excel, whereas at home I just use Open Office, and you can then play with it and have a look at it. I think finally, as I go back, so I just let Luca.
I will just summarize some interesting new features which appear in the extended panorama. The panorama bends. In the original one, Vandenberg's panorama, the panorama was quite flat. But if you look at the extended panorama, you will see that the panorama bends. And also that the panorama is wider at the beginning than at the end. And also that there are holes and irregularities. John has shown an irregularities, then partial eclipses inside the full silhouette zone, but there are also holes, that eclipses which doesn't, there are holes in the South series. And I dropped the explanations for the lecture, but I put the explanation in the poster, so I invite you to come and see me for the explanation. And there are some consequences of these new features. The existence of holes and irregularities led to the breaking of the SARS law on the normal structure of the SARS series. And the existence of the bend in the panorama as another implication. We thought that SARS series will last for a very long period, but if you look at the panorama bends, and so if you look at INX series in horizontal, you will see that there are very short INX series at the beginning and at the end of the panorama. And these new features are the origin of these new features, are secular variations of the mean orbital parameters, which began to appear when we look at a very wide time span.
Yeah, just in summary, if people want a copy, at the moment there's a couple of bugs, things I like to do, so make it available. Haven't decided how to let people have it. It's cost a moderate amount of money because we have to buy one or two components for the development. And the data volume probably forces us to do distribution on a CD. At the moment, with just the base mapping and the little bit for Europe, it's 50 megabytes. By the time you've got hold of Vector Map Zero, you're up to about 1.5 CDs. Or I might be persuaded to do a sort of a free version. Just one final thing, which might interest you. Look at all the Saros here. This shows you the Saros number of eclipses, partial totals. If you sort, you've actually here got Saros 437 has got 50 total eclipses. So you notice that the most totals are a little way in the future. So if you want to sort of get yourself into suspended animation and wait a little while, you catch an awful lot of total eclipses. We also put in here, and this, the man here is more mathematical astronomical morsels by Mears. So we've got the Mears types. So there's a question here. If we sort, and 7a is a non-central eclipse missing one limit, what's the maximum number you have? And the answer, you actually get 10 of the damn things, which I would never have guessed, even if I had 3 or 4 pints, is Saros minus 239. So as you go back in the past, you get some very, very strange things going on. So, in summary, that's the programme. been quite interesting to write it. You sort of set yourself lots of little problems and challenges. I'd like to get the latest mapping, one or two other things sorted, and Luca and I do need to do a little sort of systems test between us. Hope you found it interesting, not too much a shock at 9 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah, more on the program than the application. I think this is great. I really do. What is it implemented in, and is there a platform dependence when you're planning?
The answer is there is a platform dependence. It's a Windows program. So the underlying GNOME, which does the base mapping, was written in Ball and Delphi, so it runs on Windows. People said, could we move it across to Linux? And the answer is a hell of a lot of work. Maybe I've got nothing to do in 5 years' time, I'd think about it. The moment is Windows only. Ball and Delphi is basically object-oriented Pascal, yeah? And I chose that because I hadn't done any programming for 15 years, and someone said, don't try and learn C++ at your age. Other questions?
Yes, congratulations with what Frontex to be a very useful program. I have two questions. Will it also include lunar eclipses?
Yes, we plan to add lunar eclipses. Luca's already done the calculations of the lunar eclipses. They take a while to actually do the calculations, like about 2 days, I think, and his laptop keeps on melting. So it's a start again. What he was doing at home in Milan is to put the laptop on the floor. He's got a marble floor, you open the windows on either side, and
okay,
let's sit round.
Thank you. And the second question was, will it also be possible to study other cycles than the Saros and Enix cycles?
Yes, I thought of doing that by having, it goes all Saros Enix, having a user, and obviously if you're jumping forward a certain number of Saros and Enix, you can just type it in.
Okay.
So I haven't done it yet, but it's on my list to do.
Great, thank you.
There's one other thing we're going to add. Luke has already done the calculations for the grazing zone using the Watts LIM data, so you can work out where the grazing zone is. We haven't got around to mapping that yet.
Harold?
And don't forget the asteroid occultations.
Thank you. It's nice to have friends, isn't it? We're not going to do it for Mars and all the other planets. It's been enough work.
This is wonderful. Will you be marking on the hybrid eclipses which parts are total and which parts are annular with different colors, for example?
I haven't done that. It's a good point. I'll think about it.
In going off to the Pacific, in a few months, you do like to know.
Yes.
Where the.
Yes.
Anyway, one more question.
Good suggestion.
I'm interested in this bend that you found. Would that mean that in a particular INEX you have a couple of eclipses and you have a big long gap of no eclipses whatsoever and then mm-hmm. another couple of eclipses? Yeah. What's that about, or how does that work? Or
you were saying in the IX, start off, you have a couple of partial eclipses, yes?
Yeah, and then you have a big gap.
And then it carries on.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah, why? The reason is the fact that the main elements, the main orbital elements, changes in time.
Right.
And if you look at the INEX, there is a certain shift displacement when you jump in INEX farther, and the jump has a different sign in the past and in the future. It is negative in the past and positive in the future, and so the panorama bends. But the sign remains the same for a Saros jump, always negative, and so there is no bend in the other direction.
I think I'd say if you looked at Vandenberg's one, you've got the panorama, and the Enix goes like that.
Yeah.
So it starts off at the top, and you've got the stalagmites, and you cross them, then there's a gap, and eventually get into the central zone. And it lasts about 23,000 years.
Okay, we're into passion here. So for private conversations. Thank you very much, gentlemen.